Welcome to another episode of Take 5, brought to you by the Fleming Foundation. I'm Rex Scott, and joining us today, all the way from Sicily, are Dr. and Mrs. Fleming. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rex.
Well, good morning, Rex.
Well, hey, pass me a cannoli, will you? They look delicious. So, what have you been talking about over breakfast this morning?
I've been reading the news, and everywhere I read about how divisive Donald Trump is, that no one has ever divided us, that we may never come together again. And I'm wondering, was not my memory that under Obama that we were all jolly together, arm in arm, marching towards a jolly future?
Well, obviously, the reason we elected Donald Trump, who is really an absurd candidate even to consider running for dog catcher anywhere in America, the reason we all voted for Trump was because we were so happy with the Obama administration. Obviously, this is nonsense. The country has been divided for a long time. In fact, Trump's election shows two really important things about the nature and texture of the American political scene. First of all, it shows that most Republicans or most non-aligned people, who swing voters, that they were fed up with the Bush machine and the kinds of candidates that represent the Bush machine, whether Jeb Bush or the faceless, anonymous characters who took part in the debates. Secondly, after 8 years of Barack Obama, who marginalized the American majority of hardworking, decent, responsible, tax-paying, competent men and women, and promoted illegal aliens, members of minority groups that are dependent upon the generosity of the taxpaying, hardworking Americans, this huge rift began to be more and more apparent. I think a lot of people got fed up with the racism of the Obama regime, and it's a racism of the worst kind.
What do you mean of the worst kind?
Well, look, normally in a society which has got some kind of religious bigotry or bigotry of class, or, you know, like the Spartans and their helots, or whites and blacks in America, in societies like the Old South or ancient Sparta, where there's an institutionalized upper class and a lower class, whether they're slaves or serfs or helots, the ruling class consists of the more competent, hardworking, energetic people, and they simply want to keep the underclass so that they'll continue to work and do whatever's required and cause no trouble. In America today, by contrast, it is the hardworking, responsible, taxpaying citizens who are being kept under and put in their place, while those who depend on them are being promoted. It's a racism which undercuts everything we might be able to do productive and positive as a society. In fact, that is the great division between those who work hard, pay their taxes, mind their own business, and obey the law, and those who don't. It's almost 50-50, because among those who are productive citizens, I do not include people who work for the government, either as senators or school teachers or social workers.
Well, it seems like a long, long time ago the people were united together, but now, at least in my lifetime, you've got the Republicans, you've got the Democrats, and you've got all these other people that are stuck in between. But I just can't remember a time in my life where I would say, oh, we are really united, we are one people together. Historically, is there a time where it was really evident that the United States people were united?
Well, American history, you know, we've been around a long time, and we have only been united temporarily. You know, even during and immediately after the American Revolution, the divisions were very strong between North and South, for example, and in fact, between New England and everybody else. between the agrarian economy and the industrial and commercial economy of the Northeast, rich and poor. And this is reflected largely in, for example, the system that we adopted under the Constitution, making sure that small states got representation, making sure that, that slaves were counted in the for representational purposes. However, after wars, we often find ourselves coming together. So after the War of 1812 was the so-called era of good feeling, the Monroe administration, in which the parties got back together, the sections got back together, and we realized we lived together with a common purpose. The divisions opened up again, and it resulted in, this, in the war between the states, sometimes misnamed the Civil War. But again, in the after the end of Reconstruction, between 1876 and, say, 1930, there was another era of good feeling. The literature in North and South celebrated the common purposes of America, I think especially of a writer like Owen Wister, Philadelphia Northerner, but on the other hand, he loved the South. So we had this era of good feeling again, which was then ruined by the aggressive socialism and fascism of the Roosevelt administration. However, between Depression and World War II, Americans had to work together shoulder to shoulder. And again, at the end of the war, there was another era of good feeling. This is the Eisenhower years, in which there was this sense, it's almost a Potemkin village. You know, we with the Boy Scouts, Life magazine, Jack Benny on the radio and TV. All of these pop cultural icons and symbols and movements to try to convince us that once again we were a wholesome, decent, responsible people. And to a large extent, it worked until the 60s, when a series of presidents, especially beginning with Jack Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and their disciples up until this day, who step by step instituted non-revolutionary socialism or non-violent socialism in the United States. And this caused, of course, great anger among normal people who simply were not ready for this. And so under Richard Nixon, for example, you had the hard hat demonstrations marching in the streets. You had a real alliance behind Nixon and George Wallace of blue-collar types, that is, both in the country and in the cities, in working in factories. And these are people who were tired of having their country taken away from them. There were periods of lull in this great conflict.
About when are we talking? Is this like 70s, 80s? What president would have been during this lull?
That is the Reagan years, when people were reassured that maybe we could stop the revolution. But finally, under the Clintons and then later on under Obama, the revolution got so intense that it has resulted in what I would think is a permanent rift between the two halves of America. It's roughly evenly divided, those who work and those who consume. And so the great division today is between those who want the revolution to go forward and think they own the country and they can do anything they want to, namely Hillary Clinton, the Obamas, and all the new left-wing congressmen that the Democratic Party has put in, and those who say, wait a minute, I'm not ready for this. I may not understand political theory, but I am not ready for the continuation of the revolution.
Can you give an example?
Well, one easy example that's been in the news all week is, of course, the controversy over the wonderful pop song Baby, It's Cold Outside, with a lyric, as I recall, by Johnny Mercer. This song has been called rapey because it's cold, the girl is there, the man is putting the moves on, giving her drinks, and she says, it's late, I've got to get home, and he is coaxing and cajoling. It's a flirting song, maybe even a seduction song, but it is not a rapey song.
Well, I think the controversial line there is she says, hey, what's in this drink? So there's a little essence of, did you put something in my drink to make me feel weird so that, you know, my resistance will be broken down and then so forth and so on. I would agree that it's just a holiday, cold night, two people, but I think they're definitely making something more out of it than what's really there.
Now, this is now going to be banned as a song that can be played on the radio in the winter. But meanwhile, turn on any pop music radio station and listen to the lyrics in hard rock or the lyrics in even in soft rock, or not to mention what goes on in so-called rap, where every form of indignity against women is celebrated.
Well, rock and roll is all about that. I mean, I could tell you a ton of stories about guys who said, I got into a band to meet girls. And there's no doubt that that's what the music is about. Now, obviously, when it comes to objectifying women and taking the lyrics so explicit that it's, offensive, that's where I draw the line.
So living in America today, facing these childish people that you see on CNN and Fox and NBC and the childish things they're writing in the New York Times, it's like being Robinson Crusoe, living on a desert island and coming across the cannibals who, of course, couldn't discover fire if they had to. And these childish cannibals at the end of the year during the winter solstice think the sun goes away. There's, of course, the dissident group of the cannibals who thinks that the Earth is undergoing a crisis called man-made global warming, which means that everything is going to be overheated because of the sun. And the way to cure this is to release massive amounts of aerosol spray into the atmosphere that will block the sun. Of course, just a few years ago, we were being told that aerosol spray was destroying our climate, too. So the mythology changes.
So all these people are blathering on about climate change. It's gonna, we'll all die. That's probably what they believe. And you've got a lot of people saying all kinds of stuff. What's your point?
My point is that we live today, that is a civilized, normal human being, at any level of social class or education, feels himself living in an alien world populated by spoiled, dangerous children. And that's our cheerful thought for today from Agrigento.
Food for thought over the breakfast table with the Flemings in Sicily. Thanks and goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.